Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone. Hope you're enjoying TechEd so far. Welcome to the Office 365 security session. It's pretty apparent. It's a pretty important topic. Office 365 security is something. In security, is something we think about quite a bit as we mature as a service, and larger enterprises are adopting us, and we want to increase their confidence. And security is one of those topics that are very, very important, in terms of creating the trust and the confidence in the service. So you all can come onto the cloud and adopt Office 365 and all the wonderful things that it offers. So on that note, we would like to start off. First of all, I'd like to introduce myself. I'm Vijay Kumar. I'm a senior product manager for Office 365. I focus on depth topics like security, transparency, service continuity, privacy, et cetera. I also focus on other things in Office 365, just in general, across the product. I'm joined here by my colleague.
Hi, Andy. I'm Andy O'Donnell. I'm also a technical product manager in the Office 365 team, and I focus mostly on the admin center experience as well as some of the service updates and how those are being rolled out into the service.
Great, thank you. So I said we would like to get you onto the cloud services and enjoy all of the wonderful applications and everything else that we offer. On that note, let's just take a quick look at how we use these kinds of technologies to collaborate and work with each other as a precursor to how we implement security. Go ahead, Andy.
All right, thanks, Vijay. So as we were thinking about working on this presentation, going back and forth with edits, et cetera, we realized we were actually using a lot of the technologies that have shifted in the paradigm in terms of control and access to documents and who's able to do what, how permissions are being changed. And it's, as you think about the consumerization of IT and all of the implications thereof, Office 365 exemplifies a lot of what's happening on the security side, but it all happens very quickly for the user, and it's a very user-centric approach. So for example, when we have a doc, here we've got someone's SkyDrive Pro documents, and you can see, for example, in the sharing column, you can see whether documents are private to that individual or whether they've actually been shared already with someone else. And so, for example, we can see if we click on just the shared with, we get a list of all of the users that have access to this document and what their permission levels are. And so a lot of aspects around security, a lot of the areas we'll talk about later go into this, but it's also showing kind of some of the challenges that as an IT admin you face in terms of users can do things like share with one another, and we want to make sure that you have the ability to control and manage that in a secure way in your environment, and including things like whether or not you want to allow people in your organization to send anonymous links to content and not require sign-in to access it, for example, or the type of level of access that people are able to get. So you can invite other people, of course, to the document and share it with them very easily. So this is just an example. You could also share it externally. In this case, we used a guest link so that they could share it with other people as well. But I'll let Vijay talk a little bit more about how this little tiny example really impacts how you think about security going forward.
So just for context, what Andy was showing there was Office 365. We had logged into Office 365 and our collaboration capabilities, right, in SharePoint Online. That's what he was showing off, the team sites, how you collaborate, how you work. And that's kind of how we think about Office, right? Office has been forever known to be one of the best productivity tools out there. We want to maintain it. We want to, we also want to give you all the collaboration capabilities. And we understand that's how today the work gets done. It's not, gone are the days where we used to have silos and people used to work in their own little isolated environments. Now we have collaboration going on internally within your organizations, externally with other partners and companies and things like that, right? So let's look at some trends that are affecting security, right? And what kind of shapes how we think about security, if you will, right? consumerization of IT. I mean, this is a, like, this has become a cliche now. We use it on and off, but think about it, right? I mean, today, all of us use our own devices and bring them to work and use them for personal use or for work use or what have you, right? I don't have a work machine and a home machine anymore. I may have two or three machines, but I use them interchangeably, right? So that is actually what shapes, you know, how we think about security. Increases collaboration on the one hand, but also has some security implications that we need to be aware of. There was an interesting study that IDC put out some time back, said, and they did a bunch of surveys, and there were very interesting findings in that study, right? Over 95% of people, right? Over 95% of employees around the world, they bring their own devices into work, or they use their devices interchangeably, right? And there was also another interesting point in that same study, when they asked the employers, hey, do you think it's okay for your users to use their computers at work to surf the web and do whatever they want to do? For about 43% or so of them said, no, it's not okay, right? It was okay. Sorry. And when they asked the same question to the employees, over 67% of them said, yes, we feel free to go ahead and surf the web. So there is, right there, there is a disconnect between what the employers think they can allow the employees to do and what the employees think they can do, right? So we need to be careful, but this brings up quite interesting things, right? We need to arm the employee. We need to provide security so that employees don't do anything malicious or what have you, right? That is one angle of security. Another one is we also need to arm the employees in case they don't know if what they're doing is okay or not, right? We need to build some features in these collaboration tools in Office 365 that enables the employers to, even if inadvertently, so that the employees don't share documents or sensitive information and things like that. So that's the other one. So the second one is equally important is targeted attacks, right? There was a time when, you know, we used to hear, you know, all the time the news about hackers hacking, you know, into computers, into organizations and things like that. It used to be more for fun and, you know, they used to, just to cause nuisance, they used to do it. Now it's become a much more targeted type of attacks, right? There is this concept of, persistent threat, right? Where at a low level, they gain access and they're always, you know, watching what everybody's doing or taking information out of your organizations. And then at once, if they want to hit do a big attack or something, they'll do it. Or they continue the low level persistent threat. That we need to be careful about that. And then the identity-centric environment, right? I mean, now the environment, all your IT environment follows the user. User as the center of identity, right? Before it used to be the devices. You used to go to work, sit at a desktop, work, and then leave, right? You could secure the desktop and leave it there. Now you have to secure the user because the productivity is following the user. For example, with Office 365, I can any computer anywhere in the world, as long as it's connected, it becomes my machine. Now I got to be I have to keep that in mind. That's another trend. And then cloud computing. I mean, one of the big analysts did another survey, and they found that over 50% of enterprise organizations have either moved to the cloud or thinking about moving to the cloud. Right? So that means this is real now. I mean, this is no longer something that people, you know, some people use or small organizations use. This is real. I mean, everybody's using it, and you know the trend. We're all going there. Right? And lastly, the regulatory and compliance issues. This is very interesting because every geography, every country has their own regulations, political regulations. Every industry have their own regulations. Financial services have their own regulations. Education has their own regulation. So we need to be careful about that, and we need to figure out how do we comply with all of these regulations while at the same time we don't lock the system down so nobody can use it, right? So that's the other trend. Where's the, oh, sorry. So how many of you remember this? This is Hotmail, right? I mean, this is the company we bought, Microsoft bought in 1998. One of the, this is the first webmail and one of the first cloud services, right? 1998. That's when we started, working with the, working with cloud services, right? Even before that, we had data centers where we used to have MS, our own IT departments and things like that. But the, the cloud services, this was the first one. So that goes to show, like, the, our experience is, and credentials are, as you can see in the slide, I mean, we've our first data center was built in 1989. So we have over two decades of experience in this field, right? We have, as I mentioned, Hotmail was in 98. In 2000, several, Xbox Live. In 2000s, we had Xbox Live Consumer Services. Then there was a famous Bill Gates memo. You know, back then, around 2002, was it, Andy? Mm-hmm. That was when there were a lot of articles and stuff about how Microsoft was not, products and services were not that secure. Then a Bill Gates memo came out toward in the organization, saying we have to think about security with every one of our products, every one of our applications, right from the beginning, from cradle to grave, right? Right from the beginning, when we start building, we need to think about security. In some of the later slides, I'll share with you the security development lifecycle, how we think about security right from the point of development. Okay, continuing on, we established something called Trustworthy Computing Initiative. The TWC is a very important organization within Microsoft. You must have heard of it. You must have seen it on the web and things like that. So we have an entire department focusing on trustworthy computing, right? And then, of course, we started Microsoft Online Services, which was a predecessor to Office 365. And then now we have Office 365 and, of course, Windows Azure that we launched recently, and which is becoming the platform for Office 365 services. So this is our experience, right? I mean, this is how long we've been doing these cloud services. Great. Okay, Andy,
Thanks. All right, so in response to when you think about those trends, we really have sort of three layers of Office 365 that we want to cover today in our presentation and kind of walk you through the different ways in which we think about security and meeting all of those objectives. So first, you have all of the things that we do on behalf of the service for you to help make sure that the service is run in a secure and operation compliant manner and to make sure that all of the baselines are met. There's also then the security features that we give you that are in the service itself to help you manage things like user access and manage your data flow, your data loss prevention, and all of those aspects, and antivirus, et cetera, things that are configurable and managed to meet your policies specifically. And then outside of that, we have a section that's really designed to help meet the regulatory compliance needs, so making sure that we're putting standards, operations, and processes in place that allow us to meet all of the different regulations and the leading ones around the world, particularly, for example, ISO 27001 and here in Europe, the EU Model Clause and data processing agreements that we have in place. So this is how we're going to walk through. We're going to start with the first section, just talking about sort of what are all of the different things that Microsoft does for Office 365 to make sure that the service is run in a secure and highly operationalized manner.
So, Andy, quick question. This, customers don't have to, this we provide from our data centers, right?
We don't
have to buy.
Right.
So that's an important point. So this is built-in security. The customers get it anyway, any customers.
Go ahead. So we've got a little video here that'll give you just a quick overview of some of the physical aspects, and I'll talk a little bit more about some of the physical aspects of our security.
Security at our data centers employs outer and inner perimeters with increasing security at each level, utilizing a combination of technology and traditional physical measures. Technical elements include two-factor access control, badge readers, extensive camera monitoring, and integrated alarm systems. Traditional measures can include perimeter fencing, security officers, and locked server racks. Data secured in Microsoft's data centers is classified based on its value and protected accordingly. For example, hard drives with highly sensitive information are routinely destroyed when they are decommissioned. We also limit access to our facilities and servers to only those individuals who have valid business needs.
So that was just a quick overview and gave you some visualizations of what the physical security looks like inside of our data centers. But just going, talking, just hitting on a few more points there. Obviously, you have all of the perimeter and fire security and the controlled access. You saw the little dual authentication. We also choose our geographic locations based on both weather-based things, areas that wouldn't be hit by super severe weather, and seismic issues as well. Tend not to build on highly volatile seismic ground. And then also, some of the more impressive aspects in the physical security and physical backups are some of the generators and aspects for power. When it gets down to the data center, it's really all about our power and our ability to get that power easily and inexpensively, and also make sure that we have a lot of backup power in the case that there's any sort of interruption. And so we have giant generators and on-site diesel fuel to be able to run those for multiple days if there is a power loss as well. So it provides a lot of layers of resiliency within our data center. And then also, of course, all of the monitoring. And if you're interested in the monitoring, there's an excellent article called 88 Acres that's online that also goes more into some of the advanced monitoring that we have available inside of our facilities. But basically, that gives you kind of an overview of how we're thinking about, just from a physical standpoint, our data centers.
So even the employees that get access to these data centers, or even Microsoft employees, or get access to the service, it's a very limited number. We go through a number of background checks. Actually, we comply with a lot of regulations that actually tell us what kind of rigor that we have to go through to choose who gets access to these data centers. For example, Andy and I cannot just walk into a data center,
no,
right? I mean, we have to have prior permissions. We have to go through all kinds of things. And we'll talk about a little more about the access to services itself in the future slides.
Thank you. So here you can just see kind of another aspect of our physical and operational security. One of the main things that we make sure is that obviously customer data, we're in a largely scaled service being operated for millions of customers worldwide, but we want to make sure also that we have logical separation within the service, so individual customers' data is completely isolated from one another, and also have physical isolation from our commercial and our consumer services, so that mail data, for example, between the two is not mixed, directory data is not mixed, et cetera, between commercial and consumer. So again, just provides an extra layer of security, and we also have things like logically isolated networks, et cetera, in terms of how we keep the data isolated.
And the way we actually do it is we have, if you attended my earlier session, we talked a lot about Windows Azure Active Directory, which we're going to talk about again at 3:15 this afternoon. We use what are called OUs, or organizational units, within this Active Directory platform to kind of have the separation between the different customers' data as well as services.
Mm-hmm. Another aspect, of course, is our network and what we do to secure that. So obviously we have encryption, TLS, and SSL support for the Office 365 service. So whenever you are connecting, wherever you might be, as we pointed out, with Office 365 you can connect from multiple locations, you're still making sure that we have end-to-end encryption on that data and a secure network. Also, that we have separate networks, and once the data, another important thing is that once the data reaches our internal network, we're able to move it around because back in the .com era, Microsoft purchased up a lot of fiber and built out an extensive backbone. We have with a lot of backbone peering agreements, we're able to keep all of the data once it reaches inside of our data centers within our network and not put it back out on the internet for things like our replication between the different data centers.
Yeah, just to add there, we own Microsoft what is called Global Foundation Services, which is the group within Microsoft that builds the data centers, that builds the infrastructure and things like that. We own our own, I mean, GFS owns our own MPLS network, the high-speed MPLS network, so that it's, you know, it's secure, high performing, and things like that.
Encryption. So I mentioned this just briefly on the other side for the network encryption, but also want to mention the fact that on the physical hard drives for all of the email storage, any mailboxes, et cetera, we have complete BitLocker 256 encryption, and we also are compliant with third-party PGP encryption. And we'll also talk a little bit more about what other types of encryption you can do with Office 365 using things like the Windows Azure Rights Management Service. So there are additional layers of encryption that you can apply on top of the physical. But this encryption, what we're really getting at here, is that means that the disks that are sitting in the data centers are encrypted for all of the exchange content, so that is not accessible. And then, of course, anything in transit. Another aspect of our security are the automated operations that we use in order to give our developers access, give support engineers access. So when you think about, you know, we've talked a lot about the physical access, but then also there's the ability to access the service as employees, as our developers, as support agents need to. And we have a lot of operations in place based on the regulatory standards of how people are able to get access to customers' data. So when we think about that, if someone needs to request access to a particular, at say the machine level, then we go into something known as the lockbox, which really is a just-in-time role-based access. So this means that no one has standing permissions in the Office 365 service. They have to first put in a request through the lockbox mechanism. It then makes sure that it gives the least amount of privilege to perform the task that they're trying to accomplish. So in many cases, they don't even have to give them access to user data or access to full admin rights. It gives just the specific ones they need to make that modification, and also verifies that the person is compliant with all of the latest standards, with the background checks, etc. So those permissions obviously are reviewed regularly. And as soon as the task is completed, that person's permissions are revoked, and they're no longer able to access the service. So again, no standing permissions. All right, so that really, we covered off all of these aspects of what we do for the automated operations, and now I'll turn it over to Vijay to talk a little bit more about the security best practices that we mentioned in the beginning.
Yeah. Thanks, Andy. So let's dig into, earlier I mentioned we have, since 2002, we've been paying a lot of attention to how we develop software and applications and how we run the services as well. In a secure manner, and we've developed a number of security practices, and some of the aspects are, I'm going to talk about here, the development cycle, life cycle itself, how we think about security, how we try to throttle or prevent any threats through malicious attacks and things like that, and then talk a little bit about how we try to prevent breach and how we mitigate breach, right? Let's get into each one of these in a bit more detail. So the point of security development life cycle is to reduce vulnerabilities that we may have in the service, right? Constantly we are investigating to make sure, if there are any vulnerabilities, we kind of plug them, we reduce vulnerabilities. And also, we think about limiting severity of exploitation, right? The way we think about, whether it's security or reliability or any of these aspects, one of the principles that we follow is about assuming that things, there are bad people out there, or there are bad things that can happen to to our service, right? We assume, and then we try to see how we can harden the service to prevent, or if anything happens, how do we recover from it, right? That's how we think about it holistically. So right from the point of education, training, you know, how do we train our software engineers to build a very secure software and service, right? So every one of our software engineers goes through training every year, right? Every year they have to get a refresher training on how to build secure software or secure services. And then when we establish requirements, for example, every spec has a section which digs into security. Okay, is this feature that I'm putting out, is this functionality that I'm putting out for collaboration or give a fantastic feature that will amaze our customers, will it create any security holes, right? They have to think about that dimension with every feature, and also start documenting what is it that we need to do to make sure it's secure, right? And to do the risk assessment. And at the level of design, we need to analyze. We need to do some threat modeling and things like that. What kind of threats may be posed by this, and how do we design the software? And then at the implementation level, the same thing. Similar aspects, and also make sure we have some kind of some attention paid to the analysis of security, right? And then verification, release, and response. Like, in response is very critical as well. I mentioned that we assume breach when we think about security. So how do we respond to any incidents if God forbid?
Yeah, another aspect about release too is that there's a very long checklist. It's over 150 items. Recently, I had to go through it with a team around how they have to all the checklists they have to do before they can release the code and show that they've done all of these parts in the security development lifecycle with evidence, and then that has to get signed off by multiple stakeholders. So it's very established process for being able to do any sort of release into the service.
And also think about it, right? I mean, we are in the services are, you know, we are in the services world where we have productivity applications like Office, Exchange, SharePoint, etc. Always on, and we are constantly making updates to give you new features. We're no longer in the world where once every 2 years we used to put out software and our customers used to go ahead and take another year to implement it, go through all of their best practices, right? Now we have the service, it's always on, customers access it, so we have the flexibility to release and update the software fairly quickly, but at the same time, we also need to pay attention to all of these aspects, and that's why we try to make sure at every stage of our design we pay attention to these things. So throttling to prevent DOS attacks. So denial of service attacks, I mean, just to give you a bit of context, you may already be aware that, it may either happen maliciously or some buggy clients or what have you that are just, pinging our Office 365 service or one of the services within Office 365 and trying to create this enormous traffic that will kind of takes the service down eventually, right? So that's what we want to avoid. So we have built-in throttling. So we monitor, what kind of usage is happening. So we establish a baseline on, this is the kind of usage we are seeing, and all of a sudden if we see a spike or something like that, we throttle to make sure that there is no malicious attack going on, or somebody's just, inadvertently some devices are pinging our service.
Another funny aspect to this, I've had customers try to load test the service, and then they're asking why, their tests keep failing and they think there's something wrong with our end. It's actually against the use rights of Office 365 to try and load test against our service. If we detect that you're load testing, we will throttle you. Right. So it's just something to know that you can't do it, and if you try, we basically treat it as a denial of service attack, which it essentially is from the way our service is monitored and from a health standpoint.
Yeah, and we've had customers that have asked, like, what kind of load testing do you perform and things like that, and we're happy to talk to our customers individually about that in case if they have questions, right? So prevent breach, the slide is pretty detailed. I won't go into too many details because we have a couple of demos to show. But suffice to say, we go through, a number of things to try to prevent prevent any breach into the service, like, you know, technically as well as through the employees that try to access, you know, that have access to service, right? So we provide things like encryption and, you know, and some of the things that we're going to talk about in a little bit, right? And then mitigate breach. This is an interesting one. I don't have too many details because there's only so much I can share on this publicly. But what we do internally is we have teams that are actually sitting there and trying to hack into the service to see where the vulnerabilities are, right? And then there is another team that's actually trying to prevent them from doing it. They sit away from each other. They don't talk to each other, but they try to role play, right? So to do this, and then later on they come back and they compare notes to see what the vulnerabilities were, who succeeded, when, etc., to make sure we prevent this. So suffice to say, we take a lot of care and a lot of trouble to make sure the service is secure. So there are customers, I meet with customers and they say, oh, how do I know you have more security than I can do myself, right? But when we share things like this, it's quite apparent that we have a large number of people and other kinds of investments that are going into making our service secure. Right, and the next layer of. Okay, so Andy talked about the first layer, which is built-in security that you get, all customers get, that are built into the service into our data centers. Right, the second layer is Office 365 customer controls. So we think about it in the three different ways, right? A built-in security and what the customers can do additionally and optionally to make sure the service is secure, and thirdly, the compliance, right? Compliance aspect, and we'll talk about it a little bit later. So under customer controls, right, we have advanced encryption, antivirus, anti-spam, user access, and compliance itself, what you can control. Things like you can enable rights management service, right? We can enable rights management either on-prem or online, to make sure you have encryption and, you know, either identity-based and policy-based encryption. Antivirus and anti-spam, this is something that you can also configure with Exchange to make sure you have that. And then user access is all about identity and authentication, things like multi-factor authentication, federation, password synchronization, etc. And we'll get into more detail in a couple of slides. And then compliance, right? Things like data leakage protection. You can, in Exchange, you can actually go and configure data leakage protection so your employees don't share sensitive information inadvertently. And we'll do a little bit of demo of that too. Okay. So advanced encryption using RMS. How many of you have heard or used RMS, right? So the on-prem AD RMS, if you will, right? So that's, we're quite familiar with rights management service. It's a pretty popular application, and we use it extensively internally, right? We give permissions like, do not print, do not forward, or we can even time bomb certain documents that we share, right? So expire this document after 3 months or what have you, so nobody gets access to it. If it's a sensitive material that we want to destroy after somebody reading it, we do that. It's the online equivalent of that, right? Now what we have done is we've taken that AD RMS and we've built it into the service. We have what we call Windows Azure Active Directory RMS or RMS Online, right? Let's go through and see how that works a little bit. So basically, your documents or content, the way I explain RMS to my customers is, it's not just protection or data protection at the bit level, right? It's a content, it's a much more intelligent information protection. It knows the identity of the person that's actually locking down a particular piece of content. It knows the identity of the people who are going to consume the content, who are going to and what they can do with it. So as a user or the creator or a publisher of a document, we give you the control to do what you want to do with that document and who wants to use that use that content in what way, right? So we put you in control. That's the key thing. So basically, it'll protect your document at rest. And as the document moves through the pipe to the cloud or to different devices, whether it's a phone or several PCs or within your organization or outside your organization, the information now is protected with the policy that you apply to it. It's not just blanket protection of the document so nobody can read it. It's not that. It's an intelligent protection that knows the identity of the user and the creator and the policies that the creator applied to it. Now, let's do a quick demo of how RMS works online. Andy's here is going to help me with this.
All right. So if we can switch over here. So we're going to show a couple different aspects of what we can do with RMS online. So here we're inside of the new Outlook. Hopefully you're all familiar now with Office 365 and the updated OA experience. And here you can see a draft inside the mailbox where we've actually applied an RMS policy to it. And I'll show you also sort of the admin experience and the end user experience here. But what we've applied is we've gone ahead and assigned a policy. Not a policy. These are the retention policies. But we also have policies that enable you to decide if a message should be able to be read, forwarded, etc. So here you can see we can set the different message options, which allows us the ability to have whether or not we want to have it marked a certain way. But in this case, we've said do not forward. So recipients of this can't copy, print, or forward the content to people that aren't on the two lines. So it keeps the information protected among these users. And this is being done inside OA. So you can do this both in OA or you can do it in the Outlook Rich client as well for this user. So this conversation has been protected. And you notice you get the little icon there so that the user knows that, again, it has been locked down. So this is how it looks inside of OA. Now, we'll show you also how that looks inside the apps. So inside of SharePoint, you can also now apply RMS to a SharePoint library. So that means all the documents that get created into that library, that get added to it, they'll automatically get the policy applied that you or the site administrator has set up. So for example, inside of Microsoft, we have, when you create a SharePoint site, we have a governance policy, essentially, where the user has to select the level of sensitivity of the data that this SharePoint site is going to be used for. And so for the highest level settings, we automatically have things like rights management protection applied at the library level, so that all the documents that go in there are automatically given a policy. So if I go into this Northwind presentation that's inside of this SharePoint library, you'll see that it's actually already had a policy applied to it. And that policy basically will prevent anyone from being able to before we actually open it, but I'll open it and show you the policy goes with it if you allow downloading. So here we get this yellow notification saying that it's been protected. And both of these fields are customizable, so you can explain to the end user what's going on or what policy is being applied specifically. But basically, only people who have access to that SharePoint site would then also be automatically granted access to these documents. So even if I go ahead and open it in PowerPoint, or if I was to download a copy, here I've downloaded one onto this machine, and you can see that it's already got that same policy applied to it. So even if someone tries to take it offline, the policy goes with it, and it will still be encrypted at rest on that machine. And if they pass, let's say they do take it offline, and they somehow work around and email it out through another system, the person on the other end will just get an encrypted document. They won't have the permissions to actually be able to open it and do anything with the document or see any of the content. So now if we go back to our SharePoint library, I'll just show you quickly where you go, for example, to apply that at the site level. So you go into your library settings, information rights management, and this is where you have the ability to turn on the policies, create the name that you saw, the protected information. And then if you want to allow things like print, no print, you can also force people to not allow the web apps and only allow the using the rich client with it as well, and set things like how often they have to check their credentials with the document if they download it, et cetera. So there's a lot of options here. And then also this is inside of an individual site library, right? So you can have different policies throughout the organization depending on what department you're working with and have different levels of security. But there's also some information rights settings that you can look at. So at the SharePoint level all up, you can choose how you want, if you want to enable rights management or not inside of your organization. If you go into the SharePoint Admin Center, you can choose if you want to allow the IRM as well. So that's where you can do that and configure it for your organization. And then also, you can manage some of these aspects at a SharePoint site collection library too. All right, UJ?
Yes.
We did our RMS demo here.
So a little bit more about RMS. Let's take a quick question there.
Can I also explain how it's working on the SharePoint initiation administration site? What kind of rights do they have?
What kind of rights?
What kind of rights do they have from the governments?
Oh, in SharePoint and Exchange?
Yes.
So let me try to understand the question. How do we apply RMS in SharePoint and Exchange is what you're asking. What kind of rights do SharePoint administrators have to these documents? Your tenant admin, I suppose, is what you're asking. So you have, the creator owns all rights to a particular content, right? So I, as a creator, if Andy is the administrator, I create a document in SharePoint and I protect it, only I have access to it. I can give access to others. The admin does not. Does that make sense?
If by default, though, if you consider that most SharePoint sites give full access to the SharePoint administrator as one of the default groups that's included, then yes, they would have access. So basically, you have to make sure that your SharePoint site collections, the groups that are set up to that, do not allow your SharePoint admins if you're trying to prevent your SharePoint admins from having access to it. But it's the groups that are able to access that SharePoint site.
I guess it depends
on
what.
If they can't access the site, they can't see the documents. Right. Yep.
Yeah.
So by default, SkyDrive Pro documents are not shared with anyone except for the Share with Everyone folder. So those ones are automatically, but they are not by default IRM'd. They're not RMS. They're just the access restricted. So restricting access is different than what we're talking about with the applying policies and encryption. If you're just trying to change people's ability to have access to it, for example, with SharePoint, you can go into the settings page here, and you can change the external sharing. So this one allows or doesn't allow sharing outside your organization, or allow it only for authenticated users. So when I showed that link earlier, this would like disable someone from being able to share an anonymous link. And then if you wanted to, but people will still be able to share within their organization anyone that they are able to see or access essentially through SharePoint. When you say protect, what do you mean?
So you let me say this. With AD RMS, with on-premises RMS that we have, you can actually apply certain certain policies to, you know, to groups or organizations, organization wide, right? For example, in Microsoft, there are some organizations that do apply RMS. Any email they send out is automatically protected. Do not forward or do not print or what have you. That type of protection you can do, but you have to do it implement on premises AD RMS. So if that's okay, we have a bunch of content to go through. Can we reserve the questions for later and then we'll get to it? And we'll hang out in the booths as well. And pardon me?
So the way it affects e-discovery is if you have encrypted documents that were encrypted at the document level, so you used Office to do the encryption from the backstage, and at that level, it will not be able to read them. If you encrypt them at the document library level, the e-discovery and all of the search will still be able to find the documents. But if you do point encryption, it is not able to be read because it's encrypted at the file level, sitting on the SharePoint, sitting in the SharePoint database essentially.
Okay, a little bit of comparison of RMS with the other approaches to protect, right? If we look at various customer end customer scenarios, whether the data is encrypted, whether data encryption persists with the content, etc. Here's the comparison, right? Of all of the different technologies. This is how we think that we can protect your data. The only thing that RMS, the last one, which is lost or protect, stolen hard disk, then that's protected by BitLocker. If you have BitLocker on your machine, we have BitLocker in the data centers for exchange content. We protect those at the bit level, all content, right, encrypted at the bit level. So the next topic is authentication. Which is very, very important for security, right? This is one of the topics that is near and dear to my heart. Identity, we basically in today's world of, like the collaborating and taking, the user going anywhere they want and any device that they're using becoming their own device. It's very important to think about how we protect identities, right? With this, we are very, again, this goes to how thoughtful we are about security and whatever we do. So we offer things like password synchronization as one of the options for you to federate your on-premises directories with Microsoft Office 365, right? Even there, when we allow you to synchronize passwords from on-prem AD to Office 365, we hash a couple of times. The password is hashed a couple of times. What we mean by that is, as it is, the AD, when we access the password from the AD to synchronize it with Office 365, it is already hashed, which means theoretically you can't read the password. You can't hash it backwards, right? And then we rehash it again before we synchronize it and put it into Office 365. So you can think about it. Even when we are passing the password, we are rehashing it a couple of times to make sure it's protected, even on the pipe and in the cloud. It's a very different. It's different from some of the things that our competitors do, right? So that's how careful we are about password synchronization, right? And then the other thing is federation. Right? In Microsoft, we have very large on-premises directories. We have federated it with Office 365. Same thing with a lot of our customers. They use ADFS or one of the other identity providers to actually do what is called this secure token service, right? Basically, what they do is your on-prem directory authenticates you as the user. You're the right user and authorizes you for certain services and creates a token, a SAML token, which, again, has an expiry timer, right? So basically, this SAML token is used to pass to Windows Azure Active Directory, which is the platform for Office 365, and then the user is authenticated to use the service. So at no point, when you have federation, we pass around passwords outside your organization. It's these tokens that are passed. right? We also have, in user access, we also have two-factor authentication, or a phone-based two-factor authentication. There are several ways you can do two-factor authentication, right? Nowadays, with online services, it's very popular. I mean, you may have your bank accounts or what have you. Whenever you access, it asks for your phone. I mean, for example, even when I was logging into the internet here, it asked me for to authenticate using my phone, right? So with two-factor authentication, we have a couple of options. You can use RSA Secure ID, which is a which is quite popular, or you can use Phone Factor, which is a company that we recently bought and integrated into Azure AD and Office 365. So now we recently released a public preview of two-factor authentication, and I can show you a little bit about how that works to make sure you have secure access to our service. We also have what is called client-based access control. For example, let's say I own a company and I don't want my employees to sit somewhere out in Starbucks or what have you accessing the service. I want them to either VPN in or I want them to be in the corporate environment to be able to log in. So I can do that using ADFS. I can block, I can only allow IP addresses within my corporate network to log in. Right? And then, of course, we have role-based access control. When you create a user, you can create different levels of access for that user or administrator. All right? So let me show you a quick demo of multi-factor auth. This should not be very long. Press 3 here, and then switch.
Not really. Push it again. There you go. Okay.
Let me first show you. Is it this?
Another aspect of the user access too is kind of what we were talking about earlier with the SharePoint. But I think are you gonna show the demo also of how we have ADFS federated within Microsoft? Because with ADFS, you can also set up your own administration two-factor authentication if you wanted to, for example, use a key card, for example.
So as you can see, right now what I was trying to do was I was trying to log in as Ali B into Office 365 service, and it's asking for my first factor, which is my password, right? I enter that. And I try to log in, and it says, for added security, we need to verify your account. Now, basically what happens now is, show you. So let me show you. I'm projecting my phone here. So what happens is it's asking me for an activation. There are a couple of ways you can verify. You can either send a push notification from the service to your phone that you have pre-registered, right? So the way let me take a step back and explain what two-factor authentication is. Two-factor authentication is two things. One is who you are, basically your password, you know your password, who you are and what you have, and so that nobody else can pretend to be you and then log into the service. The second factor is the phone. Every one of us has a phone. We provision the phone, and you can either send a notification to your phone, or you can use text messaging or even voice commands to log into the service. Now on this phone, I got a randomly generated code that I can now use as the second factor to authenticate into the service. Now let me go back to the service and authenticate, because this keeps refreshing. A bit fast. 019. Okay, now that I entered my second factor, it's going to go back to Windows Azure Active Directory and say, okay, here's the second factor. Now authenticate me to use the service. And here you go. Now I'm logged into the service and I can use it. So that's a brief demo of a two-factor authentication. It's very easy to set up. You can just go to the Azure portal and set it up and use it. We just released the preview, by the way. Now it's available for admin accounts. All admins can be configured with two-factor authentication, and in the future we'll release the end-user two-factor authentication as well. Go back to the presentation. All right.
Sure. So another area, of course, is compliance. So these are the tools that we give you for managing data loss prevention inside of your organization. There were a couple sessions this week, so we won't spend too much time. We'll just kind of cover over a couple quick bullets, but definitely recommend if you're interested in some of the new Exchange Online data loss prevention capabilities. There's quite some extensive areas, but the main thing are now some intelligent transport rules that you can set up in sort of an if-then sequence that also are using some of the fast engine search engine technologies that we purchased a few years ago to do analysis of the content inside the emails to see if it is breaking one of your policies that you've set up. There are also hundreds of policies that are for certain industries that are already available online that you can download and import into Exchange. So there's probably ones already for your industry. The other day I was talking with a healthcare provider in Canada, and they were asking about a particular regulation, and I wasn't really sure. I was like, well, it might be available. I don't know if anyone's done it before. And I went and searched, and sure enough, we had all of the Canadian health data loss prevention policies available. So you should definitely look and see if that's something that's interesting to you. You can see, too, for example, how we're able to basically we'll do a demo so you can see how it appears for the end user when their data loss policy is being applied to them. So here we have an email, and I'll let Vijay kind of walk you through that experience so you can see what that's like when we have data loss go into effect.
Yeah. Sorry, I think we can skip that. We'll come back to it in a little bit. So I'm having some trouble with my internet access on my PC, so let's see if we can troubleshoot it later on and show it to you. Let's go back to the presentation here. Real quick, just to stress on some of the things here, archiving, governance, and hold. So you can actually put a litigation hold or a legal hold on a particular user, so that any email is kind of logged and audited, right? To make sure that we can go back and look at those audit logs and see what kind of emails are being sent. These are some of the features that help us comply with a number of regulations that are out there in various geographies. So, anti-spam, anti-virus. I mean, again, this is something that we have built into Exchange. You know, Exchange has been around for a while, and it's one of the premier email products that are out there, and we have. We have anti-malware protection that we are proud to say that it protects 100% of the known viruses, and we're always looking to make sure that we protect against any other viruses that may actually come up, right? And then we continuously update our anti-spam protection, right, to capture about 98% or more of all inbound spam. So once you have this. As an organization, you don't have to worry about things like spam or virus and things like that, right? It's easy to use. It's fairly easy to configure. I don't know. If you're trialing Office 365. Let me ask a question. How many of you are trialing Office 365 this time or using it, right? So as admins, it's fairly easy. You can get into pretty granular controls within Exchange Control Panel in the service, and we can walk through some of that to show you the different compliance controls that we have.
Right. Yeah, a lot of people might not have known we rebranded. So it used to be known as the Forefront Online Protection for Exchange, and so with the most recent service updates that came out back in February and March, it was renamed the Exchange Online Protection and integrated into the same admin console. So it used to be a separate admin console inside of 365. It was the Forefront Protection console, and now it's just called Protection inside of the Exchange Online. So just in case you're wondering, oh, where did that move to? What changed there? That's how that's been more integrated into the Exchange portal. Yes, good question.
Can you,
Correct. You can purchase Exchange Online Protection as a separate service and use just that for, you know, if you're just trying to test different aspects out without having to upload all of your email, et cetera, use the other aspects of it. Exchange Online Protection. It's available separately.
Yeah. So you can use Exchange Online Protection as a service for even your on-premises email.
All right, so we've covered off all of the aspects that we do that everyone gets that are the built-in security for Office 365, as well as the Office 365 customer controls, so all of the areas around the encryption. We showed you the RMS demo, talked a little briefly about the anti-spam malware and the compliance user and user access. You saw the two-factor authentication. The last thing we want to just quickly cover off is some of the compliance and regulatory aspects of Office 365 and what we're doing, what we do there, and how we think about that for our customers. So one of the main things that we focused on was how can we scale a service to millions of customers around the world and still provide them some sort of third party identification. There's we can't, for its own security reasons, we can't have every customer go to our data centers. We can't have even all the employees go to the data centers, and there's no way we could have every customer coming in looking at data centers and doing their own sets of audits. So we've decided to use all of the major third-party standards bodies to go out there and get the compliance and regulatory needs, and we're continuously adding and adapting those and meeting new ones all of the time. Our real basis for our data centers was the ISO 27001 standard, and that set up a lot of the policies, a lot of the things in the built-in security actually that we were talking about, the automator operations, things like lockbox, all came about. We had to develop and design to meet the ISO standards, and so that's how a lot of those came about. But this, it's really these third-party verifications that help us make sure that we're getting some third-party auditing and verification so that you have both the meeting your regulatory compliance needs while still scaling to millions of customers around the world. Here's just a list of some of the main certifications that we have that are, they're key, obviously, for customers. Some of the, we have specific ones that are more finance, some that are more government, education. Also have some for more military, defense, law enforcement. We're always adding to these as well. Another aspect of this is that you can, for example, you can, as a customer, get the I'm just going to quickly show you. You as a customer can go ahead and get the policies, the data processing agreement. So for an EU customer, we have the EU model clauses. So if I go to the Office 365 Admin Center, I go to our licensing, you can get the security and privacy contractual agreements. And here you can see we have the data processing agreement with EU model clauses that you can then download and sign. And basically that proves that you have met that standard and you're in compliance with that regulatory. So again, we give you access to those different aspects right from there. And there's also, I'll let Vijay talk about some of the more if you're interested in those. There's a trust, Office 365 Trust Center.
Yeah. So we also have what is called this Office 365 Trust Center. Basically, this is our assurance or promise to our customers to tell you about some of these important topics and what kind of information we share and things like that. Right, so this you can easily get to it by going to trust.office365.com. I own this site and I'm constantly working with all the teams to update it. So basically, what the site is the manifestation of all of the work that we do in these areas: security, privacy, transparency, compliance, and reliability. Right. So we work on all of the work that we do is manifested here. And then you can actually go into some of these things and learn about, Andy talked about compliance. There's all of this, you can watch a short video here. There is all of the certifications that we have, and we're constantly updating it. The way we think about certifications, too, is we have something called a risk management framework. We're constantly assessing strategically what are the certifications that we need to get so we can comply with most of the regulations around the world, in various geographical regions. So that's a little bit about Trust Center. Again, there are five pillars in Trust Center: privacy, transparency, compliance, security, and service continuity. And you can learn all about it and go there, learn all about it, and then let us know what you think if you have any more information. We even have depth information like data maps, what we call data maps. For example, if you're a customer in Europe, you want to know where your data is going, whether it's leaving the geographical boundaries and things like that, and where it's stored, you can actually get it from the Trust Center. You can download the documents that says data maps in under transparency, and it'll tell you where your data is going and things like that. That's how much we care about these kinds of things. I really want to quickly show you. We promised we will show you a DLP demonstration. I want to quickly show you the DLP demonstration and then come back, and I saw a few hands, so address those questions. Okay. Let me go ahead and show you. So here's my email, and I am logged into my Office 365 tenant, which is which I've created for demo purposes, right? And I have enabled some data leakage protection policies on this tenant. For example, I don't want my employees to be sending out any financial information like credit card information and things like that, right? And how do we prevent that? We prevent that through exchange transport rules, but we also provide you some hints on the client side itself to show you how your employees can be careful about it. So let's say as an employee, I'm attaching a file, and I want to send this to someone called Robin, right? And I'm typing an email. And as you can see, it highlighted, and it's trying to tell me something through the policy tip. It says this message may contain sensitive information. Your organization won't allow you to allow this to be sent, right? So, as an employee, I may not know what's in that file. If I look into it, and once it opens, if I look into it, bear with the slow internet connection here. If I look into it, what I'll find is there are a bunch of somehow credit card numbers. In one of the worksheets. So we actually, a couple of times, so as you can see, there were some credit card numbers here. So, my organization is, I can warn whether I can allow my employees to send that email or not. So this is within the organization. What it also allows me to do is override it. Okay. That's okay, I'm in the finance department, I do want to send this information to another user, I can override it. In that case, what happens is we keep an audit log, right? Okay, this person sent this sensitive information to another person, so it's audited, so I can go back and check if I wanted to. So, but external users will completely prevent. Let's say I want to send it to andy@microsoft.com.
Yes. So that the override there is actually just a feature. It follows if-then logic, and so you as the IT admin can create different policies and allow override, not allow override, and apply them differently to different security groups inside your organization. So you can have different rules for finance, different rules for HR, whatever you need to do. So it's all configurable. This is just an example of how we've configured it.
So what you can also do is you can configure in such a way that nobody is able to send the information outside your organization at all. You can only send it within your organization with a warning and override, but outside your organization, they're not going to allow you to send it. For example, see here, I was trying to send it to andy@microsoft.com. I'm sending it from my own tenant, which is called Retreat here. And as you can see, there was a policy tip that said, no, you cannot send it because this has sensitive information. So one thing to mention is it's not just numbers or credit card information, right? You can have text strings. You can have, let's say you're a medical company and you're working on some sensitive research, and you can have some text strings that can detect and prevent employees from sending these kinds of information either maliciously or inadvertently. Right? So that's about what we had on security. I know I wanted to allow 10 minutes, but we have about 6 minutes for questions. And let's go ahead and take the questions. Yeah.
So you better see here. So I'm trying to think. Who was the gentleman that had the one earlier that we couldn't take because we wanted to get through everything? You? All right, go ahead.
Thank you. On-prem architecture, I guess there are some third-party products which can apply to, for example, types.
So the question is, can we apply some protection services like RMS provided by third-party services?
There are some solutions that you, some add-on solutions, third-party solutions that you apply on top of RMS. For example, users are restricted to, let's say, classify all the emails. They cannot send email without classification. On the, below it's RMS, and on top of it, it's a third-party application that runs. Okay, mm-hmm. An example is Type.
Yeah. So there are, like, you cannot do that with RMS online itself, as it's, because we it's in our service, but the on-premises RMS, like AD RMS, allows you to do it. But I'm not sure about this particular application, but I can, you know, I can get back to you on that. And there are a couple of RMS sessions that I can recommend you to, where like the product managers and program managers from that team are doing sessions, and you can
The point there is that you can use an on-prem AD RMS with Office 365. So if the online RMS doesn't have the capability, you could still integrate it with your on-prem. So, all right.
In that case, you have to have some on-prem. I mean.
Right. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
Go ahead.
You.
Absolutely. So you, the company that we bought recently is called Phone Factor, and you can integrate that with ADFS, and you can have these apps as well. Yes, today you can integrate it. You can integrate it. Yes, today you can integrate it with ADFS, and the capabilities are obviously richer because it's been around for a while. With online, what I showed you is a little bit limited. We only have it for admin accounts right now. But you can have it for users later on in the year. This year, we're releasing it for users and rich applications and things like that. But for with ADFS, when you do two-factor authentication, it's much richer. Yeah. You can do it. Yes.
Yes. Just kind of a side comment. In the information protection booth on several tools, mm-hmm. we are showing all these demos on rights management, and we have all the partners calling. The Titus and all these other kind of scenarios, so we will be more than happy to answer those after this session, or you can join us later in the booth or in the Ask the Expert. So same for today in the afternoon, Tim Davis from the RMS team is going to be talking about some hybrid scenarios and how that's going to be tackled in the near future. So if you wanted to know more about how to use cross-prem, on-prem, or hybrid RMS, that will be presented there as well.
Excellent. That's a plug for our colleagues in RMS. Yeah. There you go. Thanks.
Yes, in the back. Thanks.
Hi, I'm actually on the Phone Factor team, and just a quick update for you. So it is available for end users and preview today.
Great. Oh, just to repeat it for the audience and for the recording, this is great. Nothing like giving you an instant update there. Two-factor authentication online is available for end users today as well, in preview. So, thanks, Sarah. Cool. Yeah. Any other questions?
Yep.
Yes.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the question.
Yes.
Wait, no, yeah. No.
No, A2?
A2, RMS, AD RMS, Windows Azure RMS is included in the A3 and A4 SKUs. It is not available as part of the free Office 365 for Education A2 SKU. It's an add-on. So,
however,
you can purchase it separately as an add-on, but it's not included.
There is standalone RMS online available that you can purchase and use.
Okay. Yes. again, I think it's available as an add-on, not included, right? It's part of Windows Azure. Yeah. Other questions? Nope. All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a great rest of Tech Ed.